two friends taking pictures of the rising full moon on a summer night.
Two teenage kids doing what teenage kids do.
When a stranger with a gun and a death wish changed everything.
It was violent, it was senseless, and I will never understand it, I will never accept it.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and unfortunately, we're all too familiar with stories about how violence shatters lives. But what we rarely see is how they are rebuilt. In a new podcast, The Letter, we relive tragedy, but only so we can hear the rest of the story. The struggle to reclaim lives, the realities of grief, and the possibilities of forgiveness.
I believe in miracles. Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, welcome to Project Recovery, a podcast about addiction. More importantly, it's about recovery. It's brought to you by useonlyasdirected.org. They've got their answer to the opioid epidemic. Maybe not their answer, but a way to help you out.
It's an answer.
They've got a three-part solution. Speak out, opt out, and of course, throw out. And they're going to be on next week and tell us what they're doing right now and how they've handled the whole COVID-19 thing. And so we'll do that. And as always with me is Dr. Matt Fatboy. Oh, no. Do you want a fat boy?
Do I want a fat boy? I thought you were calling me a fat boy.
No, that would be rude. They've got fat boys up in the freezer up there, and they're just mini ones.
You keep in your pocket?
Well, I thought maybe you'd want one.
It's not frozen anymore.
No, it isn't. No, it's no.
I don't want one.
You sure?
Yeah.
Because I got
I'm
two.
Off the fat boys because I am a fat boy.
You're not a fat boy.
I'm working on it.
No.
I'm working on it.
So someone says you're building a half pipe in the backyard.
That's right. We are. We spent last week clearing kind of some forest area and leveling it. And we have a guy coming to help us tomorrow afternoon. Should be done by Saturday.
Now, is this a lifelong dream for you as a kid to have a half pipe in the back?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Your own half pipe. I think any kid who skates would love that.
Right? Now, I think most people can relate in junior high or high school. There was always one kid in the school that had a half pipe in his backyard.
And he probably had the hot tub, too, and the satellite dish.
But that's going to be cool.
Yeah, we're excited. I hope we make good use of it this summer. My kids are really excited.
Are you going to have everybody sign the trampoline waiver?
I don't know. I was wondering about whether I should because, you know, broken heads and stuff. But we'll see.
We live in a litigious society.
We do. And I live around a lot of lawyers.
Do you want to hear what happened to me this week?
Yeah, I do.
I almost got in a fist fight.
What?
Yeah. I was just as shocked as you were. So here's the story.
You can talk your way out of anything. So.
I don't know. I almost talked my way into a fight.
Well, let's hear it.
Okay. So I come outside of this building and I go to my car and there's a guy who is right next to me. And I'm not going to judge a book by its cover, but this book loved wrestling.
Okay.
You know? And so he goes to me. He goes, "Nice parking." And I went, "Thanks." And then I looked at the parking and it looked like Stevie Wonder parked my car. It was horrible.
Yeah,
and I said, "Well, it looks like you found your parking." And he goes, "No thanks to you." And I said, "Well, I'm sorry." And he goes, "Get a map." And without even thinking, I said, "When I go to the map store, do you want me to get you a comb?" And this guy goes, "Why don't you say it to my face?" And I go, "What?" He goes, "Say it to my face." And I go, "No, I think I'm good." Yeah. He goes, "That's what I thought." And I said, "No, actually, I just don't want to get in a fist fight over a parking space, you know?"
Yeah.
And I got in my car and I drove away and I look in the rearview mirror and he's just glaring at me, And I was like, oh. And then I got about a block down and I felt bad.
Yeah.
And I was like, I think I'm going to go back and apologize because I don't know what – I don't know what he's going through.
I feel like this is where it went bad.
No, that was it.
Oh, that was it.
That was it.
Did you go back?
No, I decided not to go back because I don't know what's going on. You know what I mean?
Right.
But I was just like, oh, I can't believe that. Yeah. I'm like 46 and my heart's just beating right now thinking about it. Because the last time I got in a fight, I got jumped by seven guys and got my jaw broken in three different places.
Really?
Yeah, and I worked at the radio station.
Wow.
And I was the overnight guy and I had my jaw wired shut and they still let me be a DJ. So I was talking like this. "You're listening to 107.5 The End. Thank you. Taking request at 470-570-670-1075. That just shows you that nobody was ever listening.
Yeah,
at night.
Yeah, yeah.
But I still did it, and it was kind of good, and that's what got me my job on the morning show. But I was like, I'm 46, and I'm about to get in a fist fight.
Over a parking spot.
And that guy would have killed me. He would have clotheslined me. He would have beat me up, and I would have just been like, oh.
Would have dropped the hammer.
Yeah, is that something?
I don't know. I think so.
But I was like,
it's been a while since I watched wrestling.
You know what I needed?
Yeah.
A big guy like Jared. Jared Miller, who's our guest today. How you doing, buddy?
If Jared was there with you, he wouldn't have mouthed off.
Look at those arms.
I know, guns.
And so we're going to listen to Jared. He works for the Miller Motivational Group, right?
Yeah, Miller Motivation Group, MMG for short.
And he's going to tell us all about that at the end of the podcast. Before that, we'd like to hear his story. And just like every addict or everybody that comes through here, they've got a story to tell. And we always start where?
At the beginning.
Where does it start, Jared?
At the beginning. First of all, thank you guys. Like, I am so excited to be on this podcast. I am extremely honored. Dr. Matt, thank you. Casey, thank you.
The crazy thing is I called him yesterday.
Yeah? Just yesterday.
Yeah, just yesterday.
Okay.
Because we had a guest that backed out.
Right.
And I said, hey, we don't have a guest. And he goes, I'm down in St. George, man. And I said,
what?
I said, it's okay. We'll just get you on another time. And he goes, are you sure? And I go, yeah, we'll schedule for another time. 2 minutes later, my phone rings. I'll be there.
Oh.
So he hopped in his car last night, pulled into Salt Lake at 12, said he couldn't sleep last night because he was a little bit nervous, and here he is to tell his story.
Wow, thank you.
So thank you
for
going
the effort
above and beyond.
Yeah.
So let's start at the beginning.
Absolutely, absolutely. Okay, so local boy, born and raised here in Utah, grew up out in Davis County, and had a great childhood, man, all-American childhood. I have a couple older brothers, an older sister, younger brother, come from a family of five. And yeah, got a great start in life. I was involved in athletics as a kid growing up. I was a college athlete, played down at Snow College, and then finished at Weber State.
What was your sport?
Football.
Okay.
Matt was on BYU's football team.
Well, let's not overstate it.
He wore a jersey.
Hey, there you go. If you had the uniform.
Red shirt freshman.
Nice, nice. So baseball is actually the sport I love to play the most. I just, given my build and... Yeah, I was just built right and bred for football. So yeah, I was lucky enough to go down and play some college ball. And the thing I'm extremely proud of is I was, by the age of 22, I was the first person in my family to graduate with a 4-year degree.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah, they call us first generation students. So I was extremely proud of that. By the age of 24, I was a head football coach out in Arizona, teaching and coaching.
At the high school level, or?
Yeah, at the high school level. It was a smaller school out there.
Well, but that's pretty young. I mean, most people may not know that, but that's really young to be the head football coach at any high school.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And really, it was just because of all the great coaches I had. I took all their stuff and implemented it. I realized after Snow College, like, I'm not going to make it to the NFL. And so I was the guy that was always first to meetings, asking for material, stayed after meetings.
A real student of it.
Doing your homework.
Yes, yeah. Real student of it. And I look back now and I see people that go through the GA, the graduate assistant programs, and it's like, oh, I wish Weber State had that while I was there. I would have loved that, know? Because, I truly became a student of it. So I was able to kind of fast track with coaching. And Freddie Fernandez, he coaches at Roy High now. He was at Northridge when they won a couple of state championships. Man, if I ever had any questions, I'd call him or Billy Plume, who coached at Clearfield for years and was the head football coach. And
so you had some great mentors.
Absolutely. Yeah, I had some awesome sounding boards that I could call and say, hey, this isn't working. What do I do? So, yeah, I was living the dream.
24, head coach, living in Arizona, first to graduate in your family, checking all the right boxes.
Yeah.
But normally you wouldn't come to the podcast to say that everything was going great.
No, exactly. Yeah, life kind of threw me a curveball. So within the time span of 3 years, I experienced the death of my dad. I experienced the death of my brother, and my wife at the time asked me for a divorce. And I'll be the first to admit and take accountability that I was abusing prescription pain medications kind of throughout that process. Back in college, I'd had multiple ankle surgeries, a shoulder surgery, and I kept them in a shoebox, right? Because it's like, well, these would be good if I ever have pain.
And like in case of an emergency,
yeah.
You just like break glass and just take a couple. And
well, yeah. Well,
how so you were just kind of saving up your old meds just in case.
Right. Because honestly, when I came out of my surgeries and stuff, I was still super involved in athletics. And so I didn't like the way they made me feel. And around the time my dad passed away, so at the very, very beginning stages of those couple, 3 years, I went through, a lot of personal trauma. I found myself thinking, if pain meds are great for physical pain, that'd be great for emotional pain. See, because Matt and Casey, I had a hard time falling asleep at night. That's the honest truth. My head would hit the pillow, and I had all this guilt and regret and what ifs, and you've played the game before, right?
Oh, I'm a victim of the game. I mean, I would lay down too, and two beers would always help me go to sleep, and then two beers didn't work, and then two became four, because if I laid there with the sober head, my mind would wander. It would race. It would go everywhere, and I just wanted to quiet the noise down. I just wanted to be able to shut off, and yeah. So it sounds similar to you.
Absolutely. And so I found that if I popped a couple pain meds, I slept like a baby.
Can you tell us a little bit about your relationship with your dad? Like, what, how close were you? What was that like?
Oh, man, how emotional do you want me to get? Just kidding. I'll hold it together. My dad was my hero. My dad truly was an amazing man. So he served his country, fought in Vietnam. He was with the 101st Airborne. He served an LDS mission. He always, you know, great provider for our family, always had a job. He just was an all-around, like, awesome guy. He was the type of dad that when I was a kid, I'd go to him and say, Dad, I can't reach something up there on the shelf, you know? And instead of what I think a lot of parents make the mistake of doing, like, I'll get it for you. Because sometimes that's just easier, right?
Mm-hmm.
Sure.
He would sit back and go, okay, son, well, what can you do to be able to get up to that shelf to get it? So he taught me to problem solve at a really young age.
Mm-hmm.
And he was notorious for one-liners like, don't tell me about the waves, just bring in the boat. You know what I mean? Like, or I'd be out pulling weeds, you know what I mean? And, Dad, I can't get this weed. Well, son, are you going to beat the weed or is the weed going to beat you? You know, just, yeah, just
he sounds like a neat man.
He's a real teacher, a dad who taught you a lot.
Absolutely, absolutely. And he taught me a lot of stuff I think that he took away from the military. He's suffered with PTSD and ultimately, I mean, he got gang, or they call it,
Agent Orange?
Agent Orange. Thank you. My mind went blank there for a minute. He had Agent Orange, and it just gave him all kinds of medical. When I was a junior in high school, actually, this is funny because this goes to show, like, skill versus will. When I was a sophomore playing football, I didn't even start on the sophomore team. Then I come home one day, and my parents are there, which is weird because I come from a very blue-collar family who works, and I'm like, something's up. This is not normal. And they sit all of us kids down. They say, hey, we've got some bad news. You know, Dad went to the doctor, and he only has a certain amount of time to live. He basically was put on hospice at that point. And, man, I don't know. It was like I always wanted to make my dad proud. And so I don't know if it was – well, I do know. Football became kind of an escape for me. And so if I was in the weight room working out, or if I was doing speed and agility drills, or if I was in practice, in games, I just lost myself. It's like everything else just faded into white noise, and that was my element. Right? So I went from not even starting on the sophomore team my sophomore year to starting varsity as a junior. That just goes to show the work ethic I put in. And
wow.
And yeah, it's crazy.
Was it cancer that your dad had?
Ultimately, his heart gave out.
Heart.
But before then, leading up to it, he had multiple strokes.
And we know now a lot of vets from that era who were exposed even accidentally to Agent Orange developed all sorts of different health problems, cancer being very common, but other health problems as well. So that's a real issue that a lot of the vets who are still alive today are suffering with.
Yeah. Yeah, and he was on dialysis for a long time. And just to go to show you how tough of a guy he is, my junior year, they told him you only have like a year to live. And he watched me graduate from high school, watched me graduate from college shortly after. You know, a year or two after my wedding is when he passed away. So he lived a lot longer than anybody else. You know, the doctors were like, this is, you should have been dead years ago.
A true fighter.
Oh, true fighter. Tooth and nail. Yeah.
But when you did lose him, you ended up using the pills for a little emotional escape.
Yes, absolutely. And look, I think that all of us can say when you go through something like that, you're extremely vulnerable. And we all put on this mask, this brave mask that says, I'm Teflon, I'm tough, you can't faze me. You know what I mean? And I did that. I played the part of, I can't let anybody see me hurt. I can't show vulnerability. I'm supposed to be a tough guy football player. I'm supposed to be a man's man, you know?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, that's how we were taught as kids.
Absolutely.
Rub some dirt on it, walk it off, don't let them see you cry. Everything's going to be all right if you just keep moving forward. But we'd never learn to stop and take a breath and process real feelings.
Yeah, absolutely. And looking back now, I can, of course, I'm great at playing the what-if game. I play it all day long. I think to myself, if I would have just realized I needed help and reached out, that would have been just as easy as going to the doctor and, you know, getting pain meds for years after surgeries I'd had that were years and years and years old.
What if it's a dangerous game to play? I mean, it can really take you into some bad places.
Yeah.
So you're using the pills. Your dad's passed away, but that's just one of three traumas that happened to you in a fairly small time frame.
Yeah, within like 3 years. Within 3 years, I experienced all three of those. So that was extremely difficult. Then my brother, he struggled with substance abuse as well. He was an alcoholic, and he was released from the LDS hospital. I don't know whether he basically finagled the doctor into thinking, but they released him with some pain medication. And sadly, we all went to dinner, you know, we're trying to get his spirits up and stuff, and he was in kind of a rough spot himself. And he ended up going to bed and just not waking up. And he, to this day, it's kind of debated in my family whether it was accidental overdose or suicide or, you know, heart attack. But it came back that he had, you know, levels of opiates in his system that would have killed a horse. So
yeah,
that was super hard for me. I was actually at my mom's house when that happened, and I can remember my mom yelling, you know, and I wake up to everything, and I run to the couch, and he's sleeping on the couch, and I don't know if it was I was just in denial or I felt like I was Superman, I could save him, right? But I pull him on the floor, start doing CPR. Eventually, by that time, the paramedics get there, and I just remember two paramedics grabbing me and pulling me off of him saying, "You got to stop. You're doing CPR on a corpse," which was traumatizing in and of itself.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
Yeah, rough stuff.
And that's so hard to, for a family to not know exactly the circumstances under which somebody passed away. It's very hard for everybody. Has that caused conflict in your family talking about his death, or is everyone kind of moved past that now?
It did at first. I think for the first little while, it really, everybody kind of had their own opinions, right? And I'm very like open book mentality. And so I share freely kind of the hard facts. I'm a truth seeker, as corny as some people may seem to think that is. And so, but yeah, a lot of people would debate it. And, you know, now I think we've gotten to a point in our family where we're at peace with it. Like, we know he's in a better place, and, mm-hmm. you know, his kids are, matter of fact, I'm down here this weekend because one of his daughters is getting married, you know? And so it's at a healing spot now, but before it definitely caused some turmoil and mm-hmm. some hurt feelings and some controversy. Absolutely.
So you're listening to Project Recovery. We're listening to Jared Miller's story. He just lost his father and now his brother and began abusing opioids. We're going to find out more about that in just a few seconds.
A stranger with a gun came upon two teens taking pictures under a rising full moon. But violence is only the beginning of this story.
Sometimes I thought, there are no miracles. Yeah, there are, and this is a big one.
I'm Amy Donaldson, and I've spent my career talking about how lives are undone by violence. The Letter is a podcast about how lives are remade. Follow The Letter at theletterpodcast.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
So after losing your father and losing your brother, how prevalent were the opioids during that whole time?
It started off just like you said, right, with the two beers and it turned into four and it escalated. It started off with experiencing the death of my dad. I would take him at night to sleep, and then after my brother's passing, and again, I was too tough to reach out for professional help. So listeners, if you're listening and you can identify with that, like, I beg you with all my heart, don't be too tough. Like, we are all human beings. Get you some professional help.
I would argue that it's tougher to ask for help.
Absolutely.
If you want to prove you're tough, then ask for help.
Oh, I agree with that 100%. And in fact, it's stories like yours that you're willing to share that'll reach people who will kind of give them permission, so to speak, to say, you know what, if he did it, I can do it. And I don't, you know, I can do what other people are doing. It's part of the conversation now. But, you know, back even just 10, 15 years ago, there wasn't really a conversation like this on this level around the country about opiates and everything that's going on, and being seen as tough to ask for help.
From a man of his stature.
Yeah,
you know what I mean?
Exactly.
I use that as an example because he's a big man. Played college football.
Right.
You know, he could bench press both of us.
Probably.
Save you if you're going to get in a fight in a parking lot.
I would take him with you next time.
I would. Are you married at the time?
Yes, I'm married. Man. Just for the record, I would have had your back, Casey, in that parking lot.
I appreciate that.
I would have had your back.
I appreciate that. But you're married at the time. Has your wife ever mentioned anything about your pain pill abuse?
Yeah. So that slowly became more and more evident, right? You can't really deny it when you come home and you're – look, I had an amazing wife. And this the whole thing on my wife, don't take it wrong. Like, I ruined my marriage. It's 110% on me, right? She was great, brought two beautiful kids into this world. Like, she's amazing. When you come home from work, and she's been awesome, she's got the kids ready for bed, made spaghetti, right? And you straight nod out, involuntarily fall asleep, for those of you that don't understand what I'm saying, face down into a bowl of spaghetti. Yeah, the next morning, it's like, you can't deny that.
Mm-mm.
You know, yeah, don't matter how many hours a week you're working, when you got kids running around and food in front of you and you straight face plant it into a bowl of spaghetti. So yeah, it became evident. Came super evident.
And so the third trauma in your trifecta would be the divorce.
Yeah. Yeah. And she was patient with me. I went, to a 30-day detox, and ultimately it just came to a place where I think that she'd had enough. And
it's understandable because it sounds similar to my situation, and it's their life too, you know.
Absolutely.
If they've had enough, they've had enough. And that's okay. And I don't begrudge them that at all.
Right. Absolutely. Yep. So, yeah, that was that for me was the beginning of the rock bottom. At that point, I stopped caring. I stopped going to work, stopped paying bills, moved in with my mom, sadly, be transparent. You know, at the time I've got two kids going through divorce, moved in with my mom. My mom finds out the pills have now turned into heroin and kicks me out, man. Kicks me out of the house. Says, you're not welcome here. You're not doing that stuff here. So I end up downtown Salt Lake City, Rio Grande District, homeless.
It's weird because I met him outside of the building. We're at the KSL Studios, which is right around the corner from the Rio Grande.
Mm-hmm.
And we're walking down 300 West and he goes, this is weird. Because right around the corner is where I used to get heroin, and now I'm coming here to do a podcast to talk about recovery. So was that a kind of a cool—
There's not heroin available there now. I just want to emphasize that.
Yeah, I don't know.
I don't want people coming over here looking for heroin.
Shout out to Salt Lake City PD. They've done an amazing job
really
of cleaning
have.
That place up.
Yeah.
Before it was easier to get McDonald's, like it was easier to get
heroin.
Garbage, yeah, than it was to get McDonald's. Like,
yeah.
I remember pulling up and just people running to my car. It was insane. And now it's super cleaned up. Shout out to Salt Lake City PD. Amazing job cleaning it up. Awesome. Mm-hmm. Kudos to you guys.
So you're down there. You're scoring heroin and are you living down there?
Yeah. Yeah, I was living in the homeless shelter there. And a lot of times I wouldn't live, you know what I mean? I'd sleep in bushes and under bridges and I was homeless. Like,
So let's talk about though, you know, you obviously trauma creates tremendous emotional pain for people and we're usually well equipped to handle physical pain, especially, you know, if we have dads that do things like, you know, don't tell me about the waves, just bring in the boat, that kind of stuff. But most of us don't have those skills. So you're there struggling with this pain that you don't know how to deal with. But this is coming off of the death of your brother who died ultimately from his drug addiction. Did that phase you? Was that consciously on your mind? Seeing yourself perhaps going down the same road as your brother?
You know, I think all of us, I'm embarrassed to say, sometimes, like I think I had my first beer with my brother. And so again, call me out and I'm jumping in the pity pool here, but I took it as like shame and guilt because I thought to myself, maybe I could have been a better influence. Maybe I could have, instead of joining him, you know, and we would go on hunting trips and camping and stuff like that and having a beer around the fire or whatever. Like maybe I could have been a positive influence and said, hey man, you know, that's not really my thing. Like, and been some type of motivation for him to be able to steer clear.
So
of that
you kind
stuff.
Of blamed yourself.
Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah. And so that shame, what does that do to you? Feeling shame?
Again, it creates that uncomfortable feeling that I would numb through opiates, because when I'm feeling shame and guilt and darkness, basically super heavy, it's like when I would get that chemical in me, right? The opiates in me, you get that warm, fuzzy feeling that like, and honestly, you just kind of fall into the, I don't care mentality.
Mm-hmm. Almost maybe I deserve this because I messed up so many things. I mean, a lot of people start to almost use it as a punishment.
Dr. Matt, that's dead on, dude. You just pinned me to the board, like 100%. I was in a way self-harming. Some people lash out and cut. Some people lash out and do act out. For me, it was, yeah, I felt guilty. I felt like I'd let my dad down, my brother down, my wife down. And so ultimately, sadly, July 3rd, 2014, I decided to try to take my own life because it got me to that point.
How long had you been homeless at that point?
I didn't exactly keep track of the time, but it was for months.
You didn't have a desk calendar?
No, at that point. Dude, I didn't even have shoes. I got beat up and got my shoes taken from me, right? After I'd pawned everything.
I didn't have a desk, let alone a desk calendar.
That seems to be, this for some reason, shoes. That's the thing people beat you up and take, right?
But you're living on the streets in downtown Salt Lake, scoring heroin, living in the homeless shelter when you can. How do you get money?
Yeah.
You don't have to answer it. I mean,
in ways that you should be ashamed to get money, as far as, I mean, if you look up my personal records, you'll see I have theft charges on there. And I'm not going to lie, like, I wasn't about to do any like prostitution or anything crazy like that, which I'm not judging people
that happens, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Brandon Novak, he was on here. Right. He talked about it. You know, yeah. I mean, you do what you do to satisfy your addiction.
Yeah. And let's just say, for multiple reasons, I'm no longer welcome for the span of my life at the Gateway Mall. So,
yeah.
Well, no one's going there right now.
Right, because of coronavirus. Yeah. But, yeah.
But you're doing that, and you said ultimately you thought this world would be better without you.
Yeah. I thought basically that, number one, I was invisible. Nobody really cared. Again, at the time, I can look back now and reflect back, and I was super victim mentality. And almost like you said, Dr. Matt, like, I deserve this self-punishment. And so I felt like the people that were still around would maybe have some kind of peace, right? I've just experienced the death of my dad and the death of my brother. And I thought, well, maybe you'd be better off if I just wasn't here anymore. At the time, I'm, you know, being told not to come around family. And look, for good reasons, right? I'd lied, cheat, stole, finagled. I remember telling my mom I needed money for UAs, and they don't charge for UAs. It was so that I could go pick up after I took a UA. You know, I'm super ashamed of that stuff nowadays, but that's the reality of it. You're going to lie, cheat, and steal. You can do whatever you have to do to be able to get through the day. And you're imprisoned. You have shackles that you cannot see when you're in that state of mind. And I was there.
You know, sometimes when I'm talking to people about that, and I've talked to a family member of somebody who's an addict, and I go, they're not having fun. You know, because most people think that you're out on drugs or you're drinking and you're having fun. But towards that very end, nobody's having fun. And you're doing what you can. You're just in survival mode. You're just trying to make yourself – most of the time, you're just trying to get enough to make you feel normal, crazy as that sounds.
Oh, yeah, bringing you up to a baseline, but that baseline keeps sinking, right, over time. And my experience in talking with people is – heroin isn't a party drug. You know, when people are doing heroin, they're numbing themselves. They're escaping. They're running away from pain that they don't know what else to do with. And I think your analogy of the shackles is spot on. That's exactly what it is. You are now a slave to this drug, and you will do things that you never imagined you would ever do.
Yeah.
Absolutely. You're listening to Project Recovery, a podcast about addiction, more importantly, about recovery. We're listening to Jared Miller's story from the Miller Motivational Group. We're going to find out about his rock bottom and what he is doing now to give back.
Oh, The contents of this program are for informational purposes only. The program is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician, licensed therapist, or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you've heard on this program. KSL does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the program. Reliance on any information provided on the program is solely at your own risk.